Welcome to WRTI's Classical Stream, made possible by contributions from listeners like you. Learn more at WRTI.org.
David Balakrishnan, violinist, is founder of the group, and we speak with him today. Welcome to Crossover, David.
Hello.
Okay, we have a lot to talk about. This is a rather unique ensemble. And tell us a little bit about how you got together. Your background is essentially, what is it, classical violin?
Well, this is a common misunderstanding for us string players, and for good reason. Violins, violas, cellos, they're associated with playing classical music, of course. And so the tradition is just a great one and tends to eat us up. But for some of us, and myself in particular, when I was a kid growing up, I was like any normal kid listening to rock and roll, and it got in my head that I wanted to try to play some of that music. First, like around 13 years old, playing guitar. And then I started realizing, you know, wait a minute, you know, there's a lot of guitar players doing this, but I play the violin a lot better than this guitar, and these licks would really work. So I started transposing the licks onto the violin, not realizing I was making this major change from playing notes off the page to playing what was in my ears. So that simple little act was the element that got me on a lifelong path of exploring playing the violin in different styles. First, of course, in rock and roll. Later on, getting excited by fusion jazz and then traditional jazz. And then also, of course, there's a great tradition for fiddle music in our country that's always been off the page and always been groove-oriented. And I got into that more college age as well. And so Turtle Island was the thing that happened for me to put all those elements together. Also, the last thing I'd add is that my father's from India, so I grew up hearing his records. He had records of like Ravi Shankar and Ali Akbar Khan in the early 60s, you know, before the Beatles had discovered that. So that was part of my background as well. So Turtle Island then became, for me, the way to put all those voices together in a way that's not so much classical, like a classical player crossing over to play that music. It's more standing in the middle of it all and trying to make sense of coming up with your own voice, your own musical language.
Well, it certainly is because, there was jazz, you know, violin, like someone like Stefan Grappelli was really an innovator, I guess, in his time. But I do remember hearing a lecture once from an Indian musician, and it was very confusing as to the scales of the are they ragas? Is that what they're called?
Yeah.
And they're like half tones and quarter tones.
Yeah.
And kind of if you would tune a string, you would hear as it goes up all the various different possibilities of a tone.
Yeah. Mysterious, isn't it?
Very mysterious and very, I guess you have to kind of train your ear.
Yeah.
It's not at all what we're used to, in our Western, culture. The Turtle Island Quartet actually started in 1985, and the name is derived from a mythological background of Native American folklore. It's actually kind of descriptive of what the United States really is, a conglomeration of all different kinds of ethnic peoples who have come and become Americans and never forgot their roots.
Yeah, and myself, even though my father's from India, I was born and raised in Los Angeles. I'm a good L.A. boy.
You got a real Western accent there.
I don't have that background in my... And, you know, it's very much like if you don't grow up in that culture... It's very rare that you're really ever going to be able to play without that American accent. And so for me, it's more always been a matter of how to integrate my understanding and love of that music into what I do naturally, rather than try to go all the way over there. That's also one of the secrets of crossover, Jill, is that if you're going to explore combining styles, you have to know how far to go into any one style. Because anyone can eat you up for your whole life.
Well, we call our show Crossover because we're crossing over the lines of classical jazz and any other kind.
Yes.
But it is not the music, essentially, that we're saying is crossover. It's just that I'm wondering how you define the kind of music that you play. Now, you're doing a lot of jazz. You're doing, it's very contemporary sounding. You have a unique ensemble. You have kind of a lopsided octet there. What do you have? Five violins, two cellos, and a viola.
Two,
poor
five
viola.
Violins, no waiting.
Yeah, well, right.
Actually, the truth is we are still a string quartet. The most common question we get is, how many are there in your quartet? You know, so you're right to the point there. So there are still two violins, viola, cello in our group, just like Haydn intended.
Mm-hmm.
However, I guess the key thing that we do that makes us tick as players, especially in the bedrock part, is the fact that we found out a way through exploring various techniques from other styles how to sound like what's called a rhythm section in jazz.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So in jazz, the rhythm section are the instruments that play the background. So the drums, the bass, and guitar or piano. We have these melody instruments, these violins, and so we had to come up with creative ways. And so the most clearly obvious way is that the cello really is like a small bass.
Mm-hmm.
But that's only a starting point because, like you're saying, I mean, what's in your ears is the most important thing. So Mark Sommer is one of the keys to our success because he has found this way to completely embody the sound of a bass player playing the cello, complete with technique and all these other aspects of being a bass player on the cello. Plus, he's a Cleveland Institute of Music trained, classical, amazing, high-level classical cellist. So you got both just right there. We just
but all
build
of you
on
are.
Top of that. And,
all of you are. I mean, you're conservatory students that have tremendous technique and have lived through the whole, I guess, the repertoire of what you have to play as a string player. And then you kind of go into the jazz genre, but also very advanced jazz. I mean, Coltrane, out there, and you're improvising all the time. So you have an interesting thing on your album. Of course, my eye went to it, The Creation of the World by Mio. You know,
uh-huh, yeah.
And he was doing that already, I think.
This is not a new thing.
No.
We, as much as we like to claim ownership on the whole concept to conquer the world, but the truth is that the idea of exploring the connections between jazz and classical music have been there from the very, very beginning of jazz. And jazz, when you think of it, is essentially a mixture of African rhythm and European harmony. And that's kind of where I would look at it. It started off, of course, as a very much of a folk-style blues thing, turning into ragtime. And then that's kind of when you're getting Mio's pieces in the 20s, you know. And so, right then you got Louis Armstrong and all these folks coming out of the New Orleans style. And so Creation of the World really... It's before Gershwin even. So,
yes, but it's a lot of it too is the jazz. There's an interval there that's jazzy, and it's the beat that's jazzy, and it's the suggestion of things to come. But you're going way beyond that.
That's what you would expect. It's the natural course of events. What was really fun is to go back to that music and play it from the vantage point of 2010, and see what it has. And what we could bring to it from our vantage point, having each member grounded in this basic, each member has this equal background in classical music and jazz improvisation. We can just open the door to so many things, and not only jazz, but also we can get into the music of Jimi Hendrix, which will be our next CD.
Which is your next, and that's going to be released this year, isn't it, in August?
Yeah, and we can play Coltrane, which we talked about, is our hero of for any jazz musician. Coltrane is the ultimate voice of the saxophone.
Explain for our classical audience why Coltrane is such a hero. Where does he excel in terms of separating himself from the rest of the jazz innovators?
Well, like any great musician, like Joshua Heifetz, who separated himself from clearly being the one who could do things that nobody had thought was doable. That's kind of where Coltrane is coming from. He was this monster technician who practiced like 11, 12 hours a day in terms of
the
legend has it kind of thing. He was incredibly intensely devoted to his instrument. But beyond that, just like the great classical musicians, he had underneath that an innate sense, some kind of spiritual gift, I suppose. very early on. His father was a preacher, but that's not so much specifically it as much as you always heard this kind of intense cry in his voice, in his musical voice, the sound of his instrument, the way he expressed, added on top of all that incredible genius, it just crossed over from, once again, crossing the lines from just not only being the greatest jazz saxophonist of his time, but also becoming more than that, an embodiment of what is noble in music. I know I sound very grandiose, but
what
it is.
But you're comparing kind of technique to compositional genius, I guess.
It's also, in classical music, you see this separation between the composer and the performer. Beethoven writes his great, Beethoven, who was, by the way, a great improviser,
yes,
writes this great music that the great performers play. And you think of Paganini, and you think of Franz Liszt, and this whole tradition of
They were great technicians, though. I mean, all the ones you're mentioning were great. Liszt was a great pianist.
Yeah.
Paganini was a great violinist. But
yeah,
there was, but musically, I'm talking about the actual concept of the music.
So in those people, and going into Heifetz and going into all our classical musicians today, whether it's Itzhak Perlman and so forth, they don't improvise, right?
Right.
They're playing this great music, but there's a separation between the composer who writes the music and the players who play. Whereas Coltrane on the jazz model is somebody who's composing as he's playing. And so that adds another element of personality to the music, of individuality. It's an interesting thing to talk about because it's not like there's a difference in the quality of musicianship and importance in these various people. It's just a difference in the way that the voice comes out of them. And in the jazz tradition, that was always part of it, is that you were somebody who was expected to be able to understand how to compose on your feet, so to speak. That's what improvising is like.
What do you do with your new musicians that come out with great technique? I mean, in terms of you as an ensemble are doing many, many things that are new and different and will continue to be because you're always exploring. But essentially, you're playing on instruments that have not really been used for that type of music traditionally,
yeah,
I would say. What do you do with your new musicians? How do you train them to think this way?
Well, that's what's really interesting is that there's a whole community now of what you could call alternative strings that's going on, especially in America, but all over the world as well. And you mentioned Stefan Grappelli, of course, is that in Europe there has been a tradition for jazz violin.
But
America, what's really great is that the string players, because of the American string music tradition, what do you call it? I would call it bluegrass just off the top of my head, but it's not.
Of course.
It's really more fiddle music and folk style.
Because
there's all these dialects of playing these instruments that have been in our country, these great musicians who are playing this music, who have all these techniques that fit, that when you bring them in to playing in an ensemble like Turtle Island, which is based as a classical model, you can take advantage of those, like these technique called a chop. You'll hear on any Turtle Island record where you'll hear this kind of thing. It'll sound like a drummer, but it's really just us taking the bow and slapping it down very roughly on the violin in a way that you would never do in Mozart. You would be thrown out.
But you do it in the tango. They do it in the tango.
It works great for creating a groove. And we get very obsessed with groove.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of interesting because you talk about the bluegrass improvisation is different. Yours has got a contemporary sound. I mean, you're really atonal at some point.
Well, the thing about us is that what I think of us is that I think of us, okay, so this will be kind of shocking, but I think of us as a very traditional group because what we do is very much founded in traditions. It's just not one tradition. It's taking traditions that are in existence that we grew up listening to and studying and then bringing those elements together in something that feels to me very traditional. It's strange because when somebody who's used to hearing a string quartet play classical music would not quite understand that, but somebody who understood all the styles we're drawing from would say, oh, yes, of course, I recognize that.
Mm-hmm.
I don't recognize that, but I recognize that. right? And so what you're trying to do here is to establish kind of an evolving musical language that can still be called classical music, because that's how music stays alive. It needs to evolve with what's going on in our culture. And so I think of Turtle Island as very much essentially a reflection of American culture for the string quartet. I think a lot about this group, as you can tell. So,
yeah, I of course you have a marvelous reputation, and deservedly so. I mean, how many Grammys have you won now?
Well, we've won two, and of course we've been together 25 years. So for me, I mean, you have to know, I just coming out of the gate at age 30, you know,
sure,
having written all this music, I just was on fire. I knew how important this was, just the idea of it, and also the actual construction of the group and what it meant, and so it's taken too long, Jill.
Well, how does the audience
okay, it's great, I am happy to have the acknowledgement.
How does the audience accept you? I mean, what kind of an audience do you get? You see Turtle Island String Quartet, you say, okay, oh, that would be lovely, you know, and then you get this part of the audience that comes in that doesn't know anything about it.
Yeah, from both sides. Like, so the classical audience won't know who Coltrane, who is that Coltrane feller?
Well, they may know, but I mean, when you start to play, see, there is something very, this may sound narrow-minded, very classical sounding about strings.
Yes.
I mean, there just is. You can't get away from it.
Yeah, that's
very
how our minds work.
Yeah,
they
very
categorize.
Well, I remember Joe Venuti. He was another jazz player. But I never liked that kind of sound. I said, that doesn't belong on the violin.
Yeah.
And I was long before I was a musician. So it just kind of didn't belong. Whereas the bluegrass works. Now, you know what I mean?
Yeah, and I understand what you're saying.
Yeah.
I can't say that I didn't. I just so much love Joe Venuti for me. So,
I know.
You know, I mean, like, it's like, I can understand, though. I understand these feelings. That's what we're entitled to, you know, to have what we like and what we don't like. That's totally understandable. And what's really interesting is that because of those categories and stereotypes, thus Turtle Island has a career. So, you know, it's because that those lines are there to be torn down that we exist and that we thrive. So it's like it's a kind of a ironic aspect of being in a creative group like this, is that you need a little bit of those doors to open. Does that make any sense?
I think what you're a living organism. That's really what you are. You're constantly evolving, but you are, I guess, going more towards the jazz, and maybe even
we always have.
Yes,
because jazz you can think of as being America's classical music. And that's not my statement.
No, I know this.
I heard this from Billy Taylor when we first working with him. It's been around a while. So that's kind of what I feel about Turtle Island. That's why I can pretty much say with some conviction that Turtle Island is the way to represent American music in a string quartet, because we have that training in jazz. Because we're not aping jazz. We're living the jazz style.
Yes.
And so the most important thing we do is to play the music of the jazz tradition. As much as I love, personally, my own compositional approach, which I think is equally important for me, and I would speak to, but still for what we're representing, the jazz voice is crucial. So,
well, you're evolving. I mean, jazz is evolving through,
and that's important. Because like any style that's been around for a while, it can take on the trappings of a manner. I mean, of a museum piece,
yes.
And be locked up in universities, that kind of thing, you know, with conservatories that teach you the right way and avoid the wrong way. And a lot of that is important. I mean, you do have to learn.
You have to learn the rules to break the
tradition.
Yeah.
But for it to live, it has to have that cross-fertilization that the title of your show is all about.
Yes.
That's really that kind of living, breathing, cutting-edge type thing where it is going to be uncomfortable sometimes for people.
But you yourself are also a composer, so I think that's something that...
Yeah, and that's, for me, that's what Turtle Island has been for. It's been a way for me to explore how to bring these various styles together. And sometimes I would think, well, I'm leaving jazz, but as I've gotten older, I've come to see that, in a way, what I'm doing is jazz. It's just not in the traditional tradition, the very narrow division of jazz, but still, it's so much about the same idea of combining composition written out through composed kind of music with the improvised individual organic thing going on and mixing that together. So,
this big new release is going to be on the shelves in August, I guess.
Yeah.
And you are touring now, is that right?
Yeah, I'm in, where am I right now? I am in some town. I can't, you know, you wake up in the morning, that is the consequences of being a touring musician. You look in your hotel, which side is the window here? I'm in somewhere.
When are you, Richmond?
I'm in Tennessee, Collegedale, Tennessee.
Oh, okay. And you have, of course, two concerts that you'll be giving in the next week or so.
Yeah, we'll be playing. I think we're doing a lot of different shows. What's great about Turtle Island too is we get to play with some of our heroes. Like, so we'll play concerts with the pianist Cyrus Chestnut.
Oh, wonderful!
With vibist Stefan Harris. Paquito de Rivera will be playing in a couple of days. Great clarinetist, and all these people who, you know, oh my God, if you would have pinched me and told me this is what you'll be doing, you know, 30 years ago, I would be going, thank you God, because it's so amazing to get to play with these great jazz musicians.
Well, you are definitely evolving as a benchmark, I think, too. So I think it's just wonderful, and I thank you so much for taking time out to speak with a classical person.
it's my honor, and as a classical person as well, speaking with you, I would call myself, I'm definitely going to join you in that club. Classical to classical.
That's great. Wonderful. So much. Thank you so much, David. Okay, it's been a pleasure.
Take care.
Okay. Bye. David, is there anything special that you wanted to touch on that we didn't, in terms of any specific thing you want to say?
Yeah, I was thinking one thing. We were talking about we were talking about the young musicians, and I could have said something about two young musicians in our group.
Okay, well, why don't you, we'll say, and as far as the upcoming musicians, the young ones, you have some that are playing with you, is that right?
We sure do. We have two very talented and strong players who have joined the group recently. Mads Tolling from Denmark, where they have a strong tradition for jazz violin, starting off with Sven Asmussen. Now the latest is our, like I said, Mads Tolling, and he's a really talented jazz violinist who brings so much to the table. And then also on viola we have Jeremy Kittel, who, among other things, not only being a great musician who plays jazz and all sorts of styles on the viola, is also the U.S. National Scottish Fiddle Champion, bringing that aspect. And the two of them both are actually, they're examples of what's going on for string musicians these days, because Mads studied at Berklee College of Music, where they have a string program for how to play jazz on the violin.
Which is really something.
And then
special.
Also Jeremy has a master's in jazz studies from Manhattan School of Music. So this is an idea whose time has come.
Yes.
And these young players, they're not waiting. They're going. And they keep us guys running around.
And fortunately, the conservatories are coming along, too. I mean,
everything is starting to open up now.
Yeah, that this exists.
And the boundaries are changing. And what I really love about Jeremy and Mads is that they're still special players, even with all this evolution. They're still what you would call the very cream of the crop, the very unique players. And I just love how things I had to really fight to open up that is already completely, clearly part of what their makeup is, not even a question. And that, to me, is the right sign of what we've always been on the right track, and this direction, this approach we're so much in love with is going to continue in a very strong way.
Well, you sound so passionate about it, and it certainly has paid off, and we are thrilled to have you in the musical community.
Thank you.
Thanks, David. Pleasure.